timeframe to revise the agenda, so.
To add a work.
Senate Committee on Human Services and Rural Health Policy will come to order on this beautiful Monday morning. Thank you for being here. Jim Neely, would you come up, please?
So we have Jennifer. Do you want to open a public hearing?
Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2123A. And my legislative assistant, Don Bischoff, wishes you well this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
He said he rides the bus with you. Right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2123A directs the Department of Human Services to report to each regular session of the legislature on staff workload efficiency and staffing needs in the areas of child welfare, temporary assistance for needy families, TANF, national assistance, nutritional assistance, vocational rehabilitation services, medical assistance, and assistance to seniors and disabled persons.
Thank you.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Neely, Deputy Assistant Director for Department of Human Services. House Bill 2123 is actually quite a simple bill. It requires the department to report to every regular session the status of workload needs in the department, as well as any efficiencies gained through transformation and efficiency efforts. In the past 6 years, the department has worked with the legislature to get a better methodology for reporting on our workload needs. Historically, it's been a caseload-based reporting system with, for instance, one worker earned for every 250 food stamp cases. As the requirements of a particular caseload change over time, it doesn't necessarily give a very accurate description of our needs to base it on caseloads. So for the last 6 years, we've undertaken, with legislative funding, three different workload studies, two by Public Knowledge Corporation and one by McKinsey and Company, to look at our caseloads across the department and come up with a workload standard as opposed to a caseload standard. The workload standard measuring actually the work that it takes to do individual caseloads. Now, not coincidentally, the department has embarked on a transformation effort, again with legislative assistance, and engaged McKinsey and Company to help build a roadmap for the department in terms of how we may be more efficient. And really these two notions come together in that any efficiencies we gain have a direct impact on the workload need for any of our particular programs. In fact, you'll hear a little bit later this morning about a major transformation effort related to self-sufficiency programs that has gained really substantial efficiency and improved customer service at the same time in terms of seeing the large numbers of food stamp clients that have been coming to us in the last 6 months. So House Bill 2123 really recognizes the intersection of transformation and workload studies. Also requires the department to work with our legislatively or statutorily appointed advisory groups to implement any of the efficiencies that we found over time. So, as processes are refined and simplified, direct impact on the workload and thus on the workload needs. So, as part of every legislative session, we'd report out on what the net workload need is, and with the efficiencies, hopefully that need is actually reduced in many cases. No fiscal impact to DHS with House Bill 2123, and happy to answer any questions you may have about it.
Yes, Senator Telford.
Mr. Chair, why the need to have the enabling statute to allow you to pursue efficiencies?
Chair Morissette, Senator Telfer, this, we don't really need a statute to help us follow the efficiency path. But I would say that in the, I think, the 13 sessions that I've testified over either workload need or bills that have an impact on our workload in the department, there's always been concern that what we're looking at or suggesting in terms of workload need it may not be accurate. A question about do we have enough staff? Do we have too many staff? This really memorializes the notion that we have a workload model that is considerably more accurate than we've ever had before, that that workload model gets updated on a regular basis and takes into account any efficiencies that we've gained. So it really is a methodology to assure that every regular session the legislature has more and better information about department workload needs, which are not inconsiderable typically in terms of the funding.
Well, yes. So you're looking for authority to do this process and not have the legislature get in your way with other budgetary constraints or demands on your time?
Mr. Chair, Senator Telfer, I don't think it's ever been about the legislature not getting in our way. I don't think that's an issue here at all. And the report, in terms of our workload, does not require the legislature to fund any particular workload level that we have. It really is about giving the legislature better information on which to base their decisions.
Mr. Chair, I would just hope that we don't have to have bills in the process of going through bills just to allow agencies in general at the state level to pursue efficiencies. I would just expect that would be something that we would expect of them, particularly in these economic times. So,
I think the Ways and Means process also fleshes that out. Senator Bridger.
Yes, Mr. Neely, I just gather from your presentation that you feel pretty confident in the workload method that's been used. So does this mean that there's no longer a necessity to report unfilled positions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, I think that really is a different question, and just as an example, sometimes we don't fill a particular position because, just as an example, we'll have a double-filled position elsewhere that we need to maintain, and the unfilled position actually provides the funding for a double-filled position. It may be in a different category. So I still think there's utility in DAS requiring reports in terms of looking at unfilled positions and agencies reporting why particular positions go unfilled for extended periods of time, if that's the case.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Neely, I respectfully disagree. I think that if we want transparency in government, that doesn't lead us to transparency when we have unfilled positions that are left there so that the funding that goes to that position is actually funding something else.
So. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Neely, everything in this bill, I think, in Ways and Means process, all this stuff is drilled into pretty extensively. I was just wondering, but what doesn't happen in this process is this sort of reporting coming to substantive committees, so we can have a better sense of workload and things like that for for our deliberative decisions on expansion or contraction or a different direction. I was wondering. But it doesn't say anywhere in here. It just says report to Legislative Assembly, so I'm assuming at this point it's just business as usual. What would you think to having language in there requiring this reporting mechanism come to committees other than just Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I would be pleased if other committees would be interested in looking at this information as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just, you know, as a front-end thing at the beginning of session, if we could get a better sense of this, you know, from 30,000 foot, obviously, because Ways and Means does drill into it, but we never hear any of this stuff here, and I think it would be valuable. So I was wondering if we ought to consider an amendment to add substantive committees or whatever language we need to be getting this information as well.
I think that would be a good idea. I guess the work of a policy committee is to ask for this information, but it's random. I happen to be interested in this particular issue, partly as a result of a visit I made to the Western Cog Council about 3 months ago and heard what I thought was a great report on streamlining the food stamp process and so on. But I think it's a hit and miss for policy committees to call people in. We do oversight, of course, and on policy, the Ways and Means, I think, addresses the issues that Senator Telfer raised more in terms of cost and or transparency and so on and so forth. Other questions? Yes, Senator.
I really, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really find information like this very informative for me in helping to make decisions, and I know how valuable this process is. So I don't have any problem with the bill, except it's amazing that this wouldn't be referred to Ways and Means, because all that you do in this is takes time and staff, and it says it's no fiscal impact. And yet I know other bills come through that has the same, would require the same amount of time. And you do say if the bill results in an expansion of current practices and increased workload, you would reprioritize duties and responsibilities to reallocate resources. So can you just comment why you put a no fiscal on this, even though when I look at everything that this bill does, to me, it requires a fiscal.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moss Anderson, the fact is that as we have undertaken, well, both the workload models, which require regular updating, and transformation, it really requires a pretty heavily data-driven system. If we're to improve a process, we need to know how long the process takes today, how long it takes after we make modifications to it, and how well it works. So the fact is, whether or not we were reporting this to the legislature, we'd need to have this information for our own use anyway. So we do track and will continue to track this information irrespective of a final report at the end of the year. And in fact, if this were just of interest to Ways and Means, we'd still need the same information for our Ways and Means subcommittee, as we usually spend an entire day on staffing just in Children, Adults, and Families division, and other divisions that have staffing needs spend significant amount of time there as well. And this really is the same kind of information they need. Really, the only additional workload is assembling this into a report for the legislature.
Thank you. I tend to agree with Senator Cruz that it's important that we do a policy committee are made aware, because we look at a bigger picture in terms of policy implementation and so on and so forth. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It'd be an easy amendment.
Yeah. Megan Moyer, would you please come up?
Chair Mr. Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Moyer, representing the Service Employee International Union Local 503. We represent the frontline workers of the Department of Human Services and testifying in favor of this bill, primarily for transparency in how, as systems change, as programs change, so does workload, and that is not always apparent in staffing ratios. And I think it is, I actually strongly agree that it is incredibly relevant to policy committees, particularly when considering policy changes, understanding that those policy changes do result in a change in workload, but would not result in a change in the caseload ratio. An excellent example of where we have seen workload dramatically increase, although caseload remains the same, would be in the Seniors and People with Disabilities division. When we implemented the cuts in eligibility, which eliminated the 17 through 14 eligibility in the scale of impairment, that resulted in the process of more people were evaluated, yet less people ended up actually qualifying for service. And when we look at caseloads, to be on the caseload, you have to be eligible. But the amount of work that needed to be done to have that many people eligible, because fewer people who presented themselves were eligible, was greatly increased, creating a very significant staffing issue, although not resulting in a larger caseload for the department. We've also seen some significant issues resulting in workload in the child welfare department, particularly, and rightfully so, the implementation of the safety model, which I think is absolutely the right direction for the department to go, and the intention of having those face-to-face visits monthly, which are incredibly important for the outcomes of these children, but again, have an impact on the workload and what a worker can really reasonably accomplish in their workday. And these policy decisions are extremely important, but again, would not be reflected in caseload statistics. And so we strongly support this because we think it really will both give the Ways and Means process, as well as hopefully the policy committees, the information they need when weighing the cost and benefit of implementing any policy decision. Thank you.
Thank you. But yes, Senator Berger.
Megan, what is your opinion of the reporting of unfilled positions?
I think it is important to continue to do so, because I do think that although sometimes that's very necessary to be able to keep positions a double fill, I think that the legislature made their priorities and need to understand why would you leave a vacancy when the funding was allocated for such position. Often I think it's highly justified, but I think the transparency is extremely important.
But just to follow up, Mr. Chair, but Mr. Neely, I believe, said that unreported positions was sort of a different animal, where I would tend to agree that it should also be a part of this reporting process, so that we know really how much money is going for filled positions and not for filled and unfilled positions.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, seeing no others, wishing to
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just a very simple suggestion here before we gavel out of this. If we looked at Section 1, and this is preliminary, obviously, and change language to say the Department of Human Services shall report to all relevant committees at the beginning of each regular session. I think that gets us to where we need to be, probably, and then it would be incumbent upon the relevant committees to probably have joint hearings to get the reports, but that would be my suggestion for an amendment. So maybe we can have Jennifer.
Senator Telfer.
You know, along those lines, I might suggest we add in Section 1 the reporting of the unfilled positions that we've talked about. You know, if we're really going to be transparent, let's be transparent and add that in, that's a report, too, at the beginning of the session.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah. It says in Section 1, line 1718, notwithstanding additional staffing needs or decreases in staffing needs that exist for the current biennium or that are projected for the next biennium. And it would fit within there.
Right.
But I think making something explicit as to, you know, I mean, Mr. Chair, I have no problem, you know, if you have to do a double filled, you should just have two FTE rather than a double filled and things like that. And I realize the need for some flexibility, but it can be a Monty game, potentially, or at least the way it would appear from the outside. So to try to get some more definition in that, I think, would be helpful.
Okay, maybe under where you wish to put it and just insert including staffing needs or staffing status.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's what this is all about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a report to the legislature is
right.
What I meant.
Yeah, right.
To include that. But, that's drilled down in, obviously, ways and means. That's good information for a policy committee to know. So we'll talk about the amendment, or we can work with Senator Telfer. Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2123A, and we will open the public hearing on House Bill 2124A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2124A changes the name of the food stamp program to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program in accordance with federal statutory changes. It updates references to the Food Stamp Act of 1977 to the Food and Nutrition Act, and it allows for program beneficiaries to receive benefits as a check or direct deposit rather than a debit card. And you'll notice in your packet, in doing the conflict check, there was one, so there's a conflict resolution amendment, which basically deletes the definition by reference of the food stamp plan and adds a definition by reference to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Okay. Beth Stockdale and Mickey Series.
Chair Morissette and members of the committee, I'm Bleet Stockfa, Food Stamp Program and Prevention Program Manager for the Self-Sufficiency Programs of the Department of Human Services, Children, Adults, and Families. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2124A. House Bill 2124A directs the Department of Human Services to change the name of the Food Stamp Program to Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Removes the old definition of the food stamp program and replaces it with Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program definition consistent with federal law. Congress, in passage of the Food and Nutrition Act of 2008, changed the name of the food stamp program to Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Federal regulation allows for the gradual implementation of the name change, so there will be no fiscal impact as rules, forms, notices, manuals, training, and other materials are updated on an ongoing basis. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2124A. I am available to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions? Yes. Senator Mona Sanderson.
Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
SNAP.
It's a mouthful. The average Joe who uses this isn't going to say, I want to participate in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. I know academically, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is good, but I will be surprised if food stamp goes away.
Yeah, exactly.
No comment. You don't need to comment unless you've talked about this.
Well, Senator Morissette,
Chair Morissette, Senator Mooney Anderson. We did do a survey of advocates and clients and staff around the name change because we were allowed under the Food and Nutrition Act to change the name to a name of our choice rather than adopting the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And 61% of folks voted to keep this name for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. So SNAP for short.
Who did it go to? The survey. Did the survey go to the people who use the program?
Senator Morissette, Chair Mooney Anderson, we sent the survey through the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force to outreach to clients as well as the Oregon Food Bank to outreach to folks who use the program.
Even food nutrition is better than...
You obviously didn't get a
I didn't get to vote.
But you have the most important vote, so. Okay, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we don't change the name, are there any repercussions?
Senator Morissette, Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz, there are no repercussions, but the Food and Nutrition Service strongly recommends that we change the name.
But we still get all our money, no matter what we call
that's
it.
That's right.
Okay.
Senator Morissette, Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz, that's correct.
Okay.
Okay. Other, yes, Senator Berger.
I guess my question is, what were their options?
All
you
right.
know, they picked SNAP probably because of the acronym, and that's probably what it will be called, rather than the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. But did you offer like four or five choices of names or?
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger, we did offer a variety of choices. I believe we offered at least eight and then also asked for ideas from folks themselves if they wanted to pick a name that they liked better. Off the top of my head, I don't remember what those choices were. I apologize.
Okay. How big was your survey?
Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz, We sent the survey out to a variety of listservs as well as the outreach and advocacy agencies. It was a very short survey. You know, I don't have that information with me today, but I can send that to you.
Okay. Okay. Other questions? I like SNAP.
SNAP stands. SNAP stands.
Say that time. Okay. No other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Others wishing to testify on this bill? Okay, so no others. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2124, and we will open an information hearing. Mickey Cerise, would you come up, please? We're going to talk about food stamps. We're going to hear about it, and we may do some talking.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mickey Cerise. I'm Deputy Assistant Director for Program and Policy with Children, Adults, and Families at the Department of Human Services. And I believe the committee wanted to have an informational hearing regarding our transformation initiative. And this was an initiative that we began actually a couple of years ago. And we have progressed pretty far down the road to the point that we have actually started some of the processes in the field. And I believe Senator Morissette had an opportunity to listen to the results of one of those rapid process improvements, RPIs as we call them. And with the committee's permission, I do have here today the director of the Transformation Project, who has a presentation for the committee, and if you're willing, I'd like to bring her to the table and maybe begin the conversation. We also have field staff from the Lane County offices, and these staff are direct service providers, and we'll be able to give the committee some impressions that they've had about the process that was used before the implementation of the rapid process improvement and even after that process was implemented in their local offices. And I believe this will be with the food stamp program, which is the one that Senator Morissette was familiar with when he heard the presentation the first time.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yes.
Great. So I'd like to invite Sue Nelson.
Sue Nelson. Okay. Thank you, Mickey. Welcome, Sue.
Reinforcement.
Okay.
Thank you. Members of the committee, Senator Morissette. My name is Sue Nelson, for the record, and I am leading the transformation initiative on behalf of Director Bruce Goldberg for the Department of Human Services. And I hope you have some PowerPoint slides in front of you. Actually, I think they're being distributed right now. We put yours in color to make them a little easier to read.
Okay.
And I'm just going to give you a quick overview of the transformation initiative from the department perspective. I'm going to move pretty quickly because I think what you really want to hear about is the new intake model that's brought a great amount of success for people applying for our services and self-sufficiency offices. And I'll breeze through it quickly for another reason, and that's because Senator Monta Sanderson has already heard most of this in another committee, so he'll be hearing it for the second time. And your presentation packet, if I just direct you to slide number 3, it gives you a visual that provides some explanation as to why we embarked on this initiative. We also did a survey with the help of McKinsey & Company, a firm that came in to help us with the transformation effort across the department. And that survey went to more than 1,500 staff across all levels of the organization and all parts of the organization, so everyone from executive service to frontline staff and in all parts of the department. The results in a quick visual are in that Venn diagram, and you can see where it came back in terms of our current culture and in terms of our desired culture. Not to say there aren't positive aspects in many parts of the department, but overall, this is where people said we are currently. You can see where we'd like to be. You can see the pain points and the current culture that we need to change. The most powerful part, however, is in the center of the Venn diagram, where the common aspects of our current culture and our desired future state are being client-focused and people who work for us who truly want to make a difference. And those are pretty big strengths, and they will be our springboard and foundation to improvement in the future. On slide 4, just to give you a quick explanation of what transformation is, because I think it's probably about the most overused word in the country right now. Everything seems to be a transformation effort. Yes, sir.
I imagine you had a brainstorming session to come up with the current culture. Where did the current culture come? Did it come on a complaint basis, I imagine?
The survey actually brought this information forth. This is what the 1,500 plus people that we surveyed listed out as the current aspects of our culture that were dominant.
Must have been some complaints along the way, though.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
On slide 4, to try to take a complicated and large effort and put it into a pretty easy-to-understand definition, what it really is a catalyst for changing the way that DHS delivers services, and we do that through efforts to improve service delivery, to increase efficiency, of course, be more effective, and we did this with the help of some expert resources, one of whom, at least in this larger phase of the transformation effort, was McKinsey & Company, which is a globally recognized firm that helps organizations large and much larger than ours to launch major improvement efforts. On slide 5, gives you a picture of the 5 themes of the transformation effort. We have more than 80 initiatives in a roadmap that was our final deliverable in working with this contractor, and they all center around these 5 primary themes. Doing the right work the right way, which I think you'll hear more about when you talk with the staff who implemented and are working with the intake model. Developing our people and a world-class culture. Working across divisions, so in a less siloed manner.
getting more with the public dollar. That's all around strategic procurement practices and engaging with our partners for improved performance, because I'm sure, as you know, most of the funding in DHS goes out to a variety of partners who work with us to provide services. So this transformation effort really has to span beyond just the boundaries of DHS in order to be truly effective. On slide 6, it gives you just a quick timeline of where we've been. Mickey mentioned that we've been involved in this for 2 years. This gives you a snapshot of the, kind of the chronology of our path so far. We started with a pilot in our finance offices, so accounting, budget, and the area of the department that collects back overpayments that were made in error or were fraudulently obtained. And we started with that area because, as you may remember, at the time Director Goldberg joined the department, as well as our Deputy for Finance and Chief Financial Officer Jim Scherzinger, we had a pretty serious budget problem of over $172 million. Part of the finance pilot was really to focus on how to improve the processes in our finance area to best manage that issue, to resolve that issue, and to prevent it from happening in the future. So we started with a firm called Kaufman Global that came in to help us with that pilot. And I'll show you some results from that pilot just to give you a snapshot of why we felt it was successful enough to roll the effort out department-wide. From there, in January of 2008, we started on what we call phase one of the department-wide effort, which is really a lot of information gathering. And right now, we are in phase two, which is implementation. And again, I think probably the most spectacular result that we've had so far in implementation is about the intake model you're going to hear about this morning.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So will you tell us when you were implementing in phase two, when you said lean leader training, that's complete, did it actually decrease the number of leaders that were necessary, or does lean leader mean something else?
Chair Morissette, Senator Monis Anderson, we have more than 40 lean leaders in the department at present. They've all completed what we call the lean leader training. At this stage of implementation, if anything, we could use more. But over time, what we would like to do is have not only a cadre of lean leaders, and these are people who focus full-time on the effort around the department, but also just to build capacity in the area of lean methodology, the improvement methodology that's such a big part of this, to also provide enough training to where we have lean practitioners all across the department. So no matter what your job is, you have a certain amount of knowledge and skill set and tools in order to always be thinking in a continuous improvement manner as you go about your work or implement anything new.
Were you here when Bobby Mink was doing the reorganization?
Chair Morissette, yes, I was.
Okay. Was that a success? Is this a correction or a build upon the work that was done before, or a reversal?
Wow. Chair Morissette, probably all of the above is too simple an answer.
Oh.
I think that many positive things came out of the reorganization. I think that many corrections or adjustments have been made along the way as well. My firm belief would be that if processes like this were embarked upon as a part of that reorganization, it would have been even more successful.
Okay. I think any major reorganization will have problems, and the most important thing is to learn from past mistakes and have good validation for things that work for future efforts. I know it is kind of a continuum. Times change, people change, new ideas come about, and there's got to be some flexibility. So I don't mean to disparage the work that was done in the past. I just know that it was a huge effort, and it was hard, you know, difficult in many ways. So this is kind of a correction, midpoint correction, I imagine.
Well, Chair Morissette, I think if we move to slide 7, it'll partially give you an idea of the corrections that that we're making in the department, whether related to reorganization or perhaps corrections that we would need to make regardless.
Yeah.
And that's what we're calling really the challenge of the step up for us. And this is part of the lessons learned, and it's been a very challenging effort to date. To embark on something like this is really a complete culture change in many ways for DHS. To do so during a legislative session, during a financial crisis and a hiring freeze, with a major system, MMIS, the Medicaid Management Information System, going live, and now the swine flu. Lots of external factors that make it very challenging to devote resources to improvement efforts, and yet we're doing it anyway, because for all those reasons and more, it's even more critical now that we don't stop our continuous improvement efforts than ever, and yet it is very challenging for us. And the list of things that you see on slide 7 are some of the areas where we've learned we have the most amount of capacity yet to build. One of those is in metrics. That means being able to create and utilize effectively the right metrics to measure the work that we do and our effectiveness, both at the top of the organization, all the way down to the work unit level, so that the staff that are doing the work have clear metrics to be able to make decisions by every day, reporting, documenting our results to be able to tell our story with data and from a fiscal perspective. Anecdotes are very powerful and they're real, but we need data to also support those, and we are not as strong in that area as we need to be. Using the discipline of project management, we are using that discipline in embarking on this effort. It's a big challenge for us. It's a technical discipline we aren't so skilled in across the department, and we're learning how to do that. Leadership support and development sounds obvious, but and we do a fair amount of it, but not nearly enough. And then system architecture, which is really looking at all of our information technology systems and ensuring that we are designing those in a way that's rational, where they talk to each other and we don't continue to create those things in a siloed and isolated way. All of those things really are foundational to any transformation, and they're the areas where we need to step up the most at this point in time.
Okay, so if a client comes in to your office or one of the offices, do you have the ability to get the information about what other benefits that client is receiving? Because that was one of the goals of that previous reorganization.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Lois Day. I'm the CAF Transformation Project Manager in the Department of Human Services. And it's my belief that we do have the ability to determine what other programs clients are participating in when they come into our offices and apply for additional services. I'm not prepared to speak to the technical aspects of our IT system, I'm afraid, but we could get that information for the committee.
Well, that was the purpose of the last reorganization that Bobby Mink started, is to have, you know, that information available, so it's kind of a one-stop shop in some ways. You understand all of the services that the client is getting.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, we can follow up with more information about what has changed since that time in terms of an increase in our ability to do that.
That would be good.
Also, be happy to bring you, can send you or even present to you a presentation that was given to the Capital Construction and Information Technology Committee, as well as to the Ways and Means Subcommittee, that really describes in a very easy to understand but comprehensive way the current status of our systems and their ability to talk to each other and what our desired future state would be by the year 2015 if we were to do this in the best possible way for the clients. So.
Good. Thank you.
So turning to slide 8, just a few accomplishments from the finance pilot. These were the most significant results that we had. Definitely said, let's take this out department-wide. We had a reported cost avoidance that exceeded $8.4 million, and those were through actions that improved cash management, that decreased staff overtime, and increased our ability to collect overpayments. The DHS budgets were prepared and submitted 5 months earlier than the previous biennium, and the department's financial services area, our accounting area of the department, was awarded the State Controller's Division Gold Star for financial reporting, which I believe was also a first for DHS. So many successes to celebrate, and definitely proved the concept that the methodologies used had potential throughout DHS.
Good.
And on slide 9, I won't read through all of the current results. I'll leave them with you, and I'm certainly happy to answer questions. But I'll highlight the very first one on the list, because that's the one you're going to hear about more from people who are visiting today, and that's the new intake process. Now, some of these statistics in this paragraph I think will be updated as you hear from Lois and as you hear from the frontline staff who've come to talk with you. But I think the most significant result is that clients who used to wait anywhere from 10 days to 2 weeks or perhaps more to find out if they were eligible to receive benefits or to receive those benefits now are being seen and receiving their benefits same day or next day in almost all cases. So that was probably, as I said, the most significant result achieved. And then we have some others listed for you, both that have been achieved and that are in progress, and some other areas of the department. And we're producing a quarterly report, which we're happy to share with you, to track our accomplishments along the way.
Okay.
If you have no further questions for me, I'm going to step away and turn it over to Lois, and then we have some staff who've come from the field to visit with you today.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Virgil.
Ms. Nelson, I want to compliment you on this presentation. It's so clear and easy to read and to understand. That doesn't just happen. Somebody's given a lot of thought to exactly the way to put this. On slide 3, I think this is just an excellent illustration of where you're trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that when you look at trust and respect for people and the courage to do what's right, you're talking about changing a culture. And changing a culture is a lot more difficult than cutting down on the length of time that people get a service of any kind. And so in looking at some of your other slides, it didn't seem to me that those aspects of it were incorporated as much as I would have liked to have seen. In other words, they were the hard facts, and I like that. But I guess my question to you is, how do you think it's moving along in changing the culture that's within the organization?
Chair Morissette, Senator Verger, thank you for calling that out, and I appreciate the compliment, and I also appreciate your calling that out. That is the more difficult aspect. There are those who say that if we make these other incremental changes, if we become more data-based in our decision-making, if we are able to empower staff more effectively by putting the right tools in their hands, that, you know, day by day and step by step will shift that culture as well. I guess in the part of this presentation that would focus on what you're describing the most is the leadership development and support. Because to really get to a place where we are truly living our core values every day, that has to be done in a learning environment and not an environment of fear, an environment where when people make mistakes, it's an opportunity to learn and not a reason to punish, and where leaders know how to behave expertly in that way in order to guide staff through that process. So I would say leadership development support might be the most important part of this presentation that would call that out. Among those five themes that were also illustrated in the presentation, one of them we've created a team around called the People and Culture Team, and there are a series of initiatives that are being developed, not to mention a series of sort of vision statements in order to be more clear with everyone all across the department. And one of the steps is to create a continuous feedback loop, constantly getting feedback from people across the department as well as from our partners about whether or not we're walking our talk. The rhetoric is great, but if this isn't what it looks like on the ground, then something's wrong. And we are going to develop those continuous feedback loops in order to keep getting suggestions and ideas from the people who are out on the front line doing the work and from our partners in the field and to be able to move in that direction that you're talking about for the culture change. But you're right, we have much more work to do on that subject.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair. Well, they've obviously selected the best person for the transformation director. I think you have a very good grasp of exactly what's been wrong, what needs to be done, and are trying to move in that direction. It looks like you're successfully implementing a number of the steps and phases. Mm-hmm. I would just like to remark to you that, remember, you've had five directors in 5 years prior to Dr. Goldberg, and so the consistency of a director has, I think, been certainly at a disadvantage to those of you who have been in the department. So,
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, thank you very much, and Director Goldberg is very supportive of this effort, and you're right. What I tell people that I'm talking to in our various offices throughout the agency is it's really not up to one director to make this happen, because as you pointed out, we did go through a period of time of having a director a year for 5 years. It's really up to everyone in the organization to take a leadership role and to institutionalize this so that no matter who comes in to be our director, this turns out to be one of the huge strengths and positives of the organization that person can count on, as opposed to coming in and having to try to build it from the ground up every time. I appreciate your compliment. It's really not me so much as the people you're going to hear from today who are really carrying the water on this effort and doing the hard work. So I'd be glad you get to talk to them today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I first noticed the cultural change, systemic, that which is a systemic change, when I dealt with Mickey Cerise on problems dealing with children. And I would get a complaint from a parent or someone, and I would call Mickey's office, and he would immediately get in touch with, what I would say is, Mickey, I don't really know what's going on. I'm not in a position to know. This is the information that I'm getting. Would you please check with the appropriate staff person? Would you please check back with this individual and let them know what's going on? And one time I called him at 4:30, and I think I got a call about 10 to 5 with an answer. But that is real service. And so I credit Mickey, who's sitting in the back of the room, with being part of that change. Now, this occurred when Ramona Foley was the director of that particular department, and Mickey was her assistant. So I've seen the change, and I think it's wonderful.
Thank you, Chair Morissette, members of the committee. I only have three slides to go over with you, and then we're available for any questions you might have. I've been joined by three line workers who are actually from Marion County, not Lane County. Just a small correction.
I thought they were going to be from Lynn County.
We do have someone from Lynn County.
Very good.
Who joined us. Debbie McCullough, who is the self-sufficiency program manager in Lynn County, is in the audience, as well as John Radich, who's the district manager from Lane County.
Okay.
Two of the first counties to implement this, the intake improvements. And also joining me at the table is Allison Queering, Shelby Koenig, and Sherry Messiera, and I'll allow them to individually introduce themselves when we get to the question portion. In your PowerPoint, on slide 11, it highlights some of the elements of the self-sufficiency intake improvement model that we rolled out to all of our offices. I'll go over just a couple of those. The elements that I believe led to the greatest improvement were, first, we prioritized the work. As you're aware, we have a large number of people coming to offices for services now, an increase, and we prioritized the work to see those people, do their eligibility determinations, and issue benefits, and made that the priority work. We developed a schedule board, which allows us to have intake appointments all day, every day of the week. What this does is, when someone comes into the office, rather than being given an appointment sometime in the future, our effort is to try and have an appointment available for them that day that we can give them. The scheduling board also rotates workers who do this eligibility work so that it equalizes the workload between those that are doing it. We try to ensure that no single or several workers are have a heavier load of this type of work to carry than others, and the scheduling board allows us to do that. And it also is a very quick visual representation of what slots are available when. The slots are defined in terms of time needed for the appointment based on the complexity of the request the client's making when they come into the office. So they may have more than one program that they're coming in to see us about, and we're able to see immediately where we can fit that appointment into what's available that day. In addition, the effort is to complete all the eligibility work and issue benefits on the day the client's in the office with us, if at all possible. What this does is it avoids the client having to return several times, and it also, because we're doing it same day, it decreases the number of missed appointments we have. You can imagine that the lives of our clients, just as our own, are very complex, and if they're given an appointment several weeks ahead or even a week ahead, things can intervene. They may miss that appointment and have to reschedule. If we're able to see them the day they walk into the office, then we avoid that rescheduling. And the final piece is that we implemented the use of the Lean Daily Management System when we implemented this new model. And elements of the Lean Daily Management System are that we use identify metrics or some form of measurement that helps workers see how they're doing in the daily progress of their work. We have what's called a visual board, which is separate from the scheduling board, where those metrics are displayed, as well as some tools we use for workers to raise daily improvements they may see or want to implement in their own work. And then we have regular conversations, which we call huddles or performance conversations, with employees around that visual board that helps disseminate the information and helps everyone to understand where we are in terms of progress in making those improvements. So in reference to Senator Verger's comment about how do you change the culture and how are you paying heed to changing the culture, the Lean Daily Management System is part of that. Regular conversations with employees, which also allow the people that are actually doing the work to give rise to improvements they see in processes that support their work that can be implemented in real time for them actually seeing the benefits of that improvement. The next slide, slide 12, has some results from statewide results from the program that we're seeing so far. With this implementation, we also began a customer service satisfaction survey. And from that, as of the 24th of April, we have a 98% good or excellent client response or client satisfaction with the service they received when they came into our office. And we also implemented a staff satisfaction survey that follows the implementation by approximately 3 to 4 weeks after we implement in an office. These are very early results in terms of the number of surveys that have been returned, but at this point we have a 75% of our staff saying the model is working fairly to very well for them in their daily work. I wanted to also point out that approximately 30% of the staff have highlighted concern about the ongoing work. This is the intake model. You're probably aware that there's another body of work that these same workers do in terms of the continuing caseload that they carry and services to these clients once they're found to be eligible and issued benefits. Our work from this point forward is around that ongoing work and seeing where we can create efficiencies in that as well. So this is just the start. It's not the end of our efforts in terms of improving the work that these folks do or the processes that support their work. There is a body of work that is called backlog. It's not really backlog. It's the ongoing work for these cases. And we're monitoring that. We're measuring that to ensure that our efforts on the front end don't unduly back up the work on the tail end. The next slide, slide 13, shows you where we are in terms of our efforts to provide same-day, next-day service to folks. At this point, or as of April 24th, we're able to provide an appointment on the day someone comes into our office in 92% of the cases. And of those 92%, 65% are receiving their benefits that same day. We anticipate that will increase. One of the things that impacts our ability to issue benefits that same day is that many people are not used to getting the service the same day, and so they don't always come in with all the paperwork they need for us to make an eligibility determination. So they do have to leave and perhaps come back. But one of the elements we've asked workers to incorporate is to really do everything they can to avoid pending a case for paperwork. And one example of that would be if someone's missing some employment data, if the client can agree to have the worker, while they're there, contact the employer and get that information verbally over the phone, they're making that effort so they can avoid the applicant having to come back into the office. So those are the pieces of the model that we wanted to highlight. Again, these are the folks that are actually doing the work and can give you a representation of what that's like from the line level. This is sort of the higher level view, so we're available for any questions or comments you may have.
Comments. Introduce yourself, please, and just kind of give us some...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Shelby Koning, and I'm a human service specialist in the South Salem Self-Sufficiency Office.
Your last name?
Koning.
Would you spell that, please?
K-O-N-I-N-G.
Okay.
And I wrote up a brief statement, or fairly brief. This new process has not been without its challenges, but the positives far outweigh the negatives. Learning new ways of managing time has proven advantageous for most of our workers. With the new rotating log, it's possible to forecast in advance the busier times of our work week and plan accordingly. We have longer time frames to see our clients in than we did previously, ensuring that we have time to issue benefits whenever possible and have more face-to-face time with the clients, which allows us to sometimes identify barriers and refer to resources that may be helpful to them and their families. When we're dealing with those in crisis or with disabilities, sometimes they need more of our time. I had a client in the other day who kept jumping around and really had a lot that she needed to talk about. I was able to ask for additional time to see her and to pinpoint some resources that might be helpful to her. She left with food stamps, referrals to agencies that would help her to maintain her health and safety, and a sense of being heard. There's more time discussing individual needs and less time typing due to the new narrative, although even for a seasoned worker, it's difficult not to miss things when we went from so much structure to very little. I have always chosen to do desk-side interviewing as I believe that it makes things faster, more efficient, and more personal, and I'm pleased that the new intake model embraces that aspect as well, making it more uniform for all clients who come through our doors. Full service takes longer, but it also removes barriers and helps us to help our clients move towards our agency's goal of self-sufficiency. With our increasing caseloads and a new clientele, where a good portion of the applicants coming through our doors have never had food stamps before and have no idea how it works, it's vital that we communicate every step of the way and that we build a rapport with them and try to take away the sense of shame and embarrassment that so often comes with asking for help from our agency. This takes time. I'm hopeful that as we progress, our time frames will be adjusted to take into account some of these factors that were less prevalent when planning for these programs began. I also hope that in time we'll move from the magnetic board to utilizing the technology at our fingertips to create a friendlier system for tracking appointments. Our ongoing clients are reporting more changes to us, and there's more paperwork as a result. The new intake model is helping us to be able to handle the workload more efficiently, and along with other measures that took place to help our implementation roll out smoothly, has significantly reduced our office's backlog of paperwork. Working in teams helps to bring us together, and our daily huddle keeps us all in communication with one another. I'm confident that our new model will continue to help us to operate more efficiently and to keep giving our clients excellent customer service.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Yes, just a real brief. Are you seeing now with the terrible economic times more new clients?
Definitely.
And what's the demographic change in the clients? I mean, different.
Women,
I don't know if there's different age groups, but different income levels and so on.
Different income levels, more clients who are receiving unemployment, who've been laid off of their jobs and have never walked through our doors before. Definitely more people who are potentially not eligible for unemployment, people who've been self-employed, who've seen their businesses drop off. So we have a lot of people who never expected that they would need our help, never expected they need to walk through our doors, and really need to be explained every step of the process because they don't know what food stamps are, they don't know how to use the card, they don't know what you can buy with it. Typically, in the past, we had many repeating clients, and we still have those. But those clients knew what to expect, so the majority of the people that would come through our doors had an understanding of how food stamps worked, and that cut out a lot of the explaining. Here it's very important for us to communicate clearly. I had a client call me and say, I went to the grocery store on the 1st and my benefits weren't there, and you know, he didn't know that his benefits were to be issued according to the last digit of the Social Security number, which is something that it's easy to miss when most people have that general knowledge, making it more important that we pay attention to every detail.
It'd be embarrassing to have a whole bag of groceries.
Horribly embarrassing, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members...
Can you move the...
Yeah, move the microphone. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Allison Queering. I am a Human Service Specialist 1 in the Woodburn branch. I work directly at the front line, so with the scheduling board and with screening the applications and making those appointments same day, next day, and receiving those customer surveys. The difference that it has made in the lobby is monumental. Before we had this intake process, we had a line through the lobby, people waiting in the lobby to speak with the workers and for their appointments that they had made weeks ago. And now we have a very much shorter line. The lobby is less impacted. It's not as crowded. The getting the appointment the same day, the look on the client's faces is like, I get to be seen today? Are you sure? just to get those benefits out to them and not have to see them 2-3 times a in a week just to turn in a piece of paper or come in for this appointment or do that has been incredible change.
Do clients who receive the services, then how often do they have to come back in to reaffirm?
It depends on their situation. It's every 6 months. They do have to recertify. But if there's a change within those 6 months, they can let us know, as in, I got a job, I lost a job, I had a child, things like that. So there's constantly changes.
Do they have to come in to report those changes? I got a job. Can they do it by phone?
They both.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Just another.
Yes.
Can they do much online yet for the?
The only thing that
SNAP program
that I am aware of that they can do online is print the application. Fill out the application.
That's right. I remember you. Being told that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Stamps.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sherry Massera. I'm the lead food stamp worker for the Kaiser Self-Sufficiency Branch here in Marion County. And I would just like to echo on Allison and Shelby's comments.
Mm-hmm.
Since we have implemented the new intake model in the Marion County area, we have seen very satisfied customers, very thrilled customers, knowing that they are walking out of our office with their benefits on their card so they can go feed their families instead of waiting the typical 10 to 20 days before they receive their benefits. With this new intake model, we are allowed as workers the necessary time frame to talk to our clients, see what's going on with their families, getting them the resources that they and their families may need for the community, documenting all the information, and if they do not have all the documentation that we need in order to determine our eligibility, having the time available to assist those clients in gathering that information to prevent them coming back from the office a second time. We are seeing an increase with the economic times of families that have never asked our office for services, and they are very ashamed coming into our office until they come and meet with us and see what programs and services we have available to offer them, and seeing that they are able to walk out of our office with benefits in order to help their families. If unfortunately we are unable to assist them due to their financial situation, at least we are giving them resources for the community of different agencies and services that may be able to assist them and their families with the needs that they have. So we are very pleased with the new intake model.
Okay. What's the average length of an appointment? How long do you spend with a client in average? How many clients a day can you see?
Chair Morissette, the Kaiser Self-Sufficiency Branch sees between 20 and 25 clients per day, and the average amount of an appointment time is 45 minutes.
Okay. Now, how many workers are there?
Chair Morissette, there are 7 workers in the Kaiser Self-Sufficiency Branch.
Sorry.
We're a smaller branch.
Okay.
The average branch has between 12 and 15 eligibility workers.
Okay. So in your branch, you see 27, did you say 27 clients a day?
Between 20 and 25 a day, sir.
20 and 25 a day. That's in your, for about 45 minutes is your average time, and that
is correct.
That includes all of your workers. Okay. Are you spending more or less time now than you did 2 years ago? You're spending probably more time per client.
Chair Moore said that is correct. We are allowed more time with our clients to gather the information
okay.
we need in order to determine accurate benefits
okay.
and to issue accurate benefits to the client
okay.
than we have been in
and
the
And you're
past.
Getting better results.
Absolutely.
Okay. Wonderful. Yes.
I don't know if people can game the system. Everyone says, oh, this person, this is always anecdotal from someone saying, I saw someone who had food stamps and, no, SNAPs stamps. And they, were in a nice car and all that kind of thing. Are there certain requirements that they have to have that sort of cuts down the fraud?
Chair Morissette, Senator Moise Anderson, there are policies in place to try and cut that down. But as we all know, as individuals and members of the community, that is going to happen once in a while. We just do our best efforts with the resources we have, both technology and with our communication with the clients to try and cut that down. But unfortunately, it does happen.
Mm-hmm. And in many cases, I would rather err on giving a food stamp to a family that really needs it. And so there's fraud wherever you go, no matter what business you're in.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll hear from Lane and Lynn County.
While these folks are coming
yeah.
to the table, if I can make one comment,
sure.
Chair Morissette. There's an average length of interview. The scheduling board actually allows the interview length to be determined based on the number of services the person coming in believes they might be eligible for. It also allows for an extension of the interview time if once the worker is meeting with the customer, they discover there are other things they could be eligible for. There's an in-the-moment way that a worker can instant message the front desk and say, increase my appointment time. And because of the way the board is set up, if they have an appointment immediately following that one, there's another worker available to take that appointment so that client isn't delayed because the client preceding them took additional time. And it can vary anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow. That's interesting.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead. Introduce yourself, please.
Chair Morissette, it's nice to see you again and the rest of the committee. My name is Debbie McCullough, and I'm the Self-Sufficiency Program Manager for Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln Counties. We were one of the original pilots when McKinsey started the transformation project. We actually looked at it as Christmas in July because we started the whole process in July. And we put the intake model into effect, it seems like, in about November. And at that point in time, our lobby in Albany was full. We have had about a 26% increase in food stamp clients since last year in a year period of time, which is not anywhere near where some of the other counties have been, but it is quite a bit for us. We had people out the lobby into the parking lot most days. We were out 2 weeks in appointments for people to be seen. We put the model into effect. We have seven workers. We're an area that has a processing center, and so our processing center is kind of like a call center. They have a very large caseload. I think right now they have about 6,200 cases. So we have about 11 workers that handle that. Because of that, we have fewer workers in the branches. So in Albany, we have seven workers that do intake. The beginning of it was a few bumps. We had our appointments as well as our walk-ins as we're starting this process. So at the beginning first couple of weeks, and I think this has been pretty much elsewhere across the state, the workers were extremely busy. They were seeing people that were already had appointments as well as walk with the people that walk in. Our workers are very, very dedicated. They really like the system. We've had a cultural shift in terminology. You know, you've heard a lot about metrics today. Our workers are not used to the terminology of metrics. They're used to statistics and measurements and those kinds of things, but the terminology is a little different for them. And one of the things that Lois and I had talked about recently is we have huddles every morning to talk about the communication. My staff are saying, we don't have huddles. What's a huddle? They have a five-minute meeting, which has been something they've done for years and years and years. And that five-minute meeting, every morning, all staff in the branch meet, and they talk about who's here, who isn't here, who's doing what, how they need to shift the work. Because that's one of the things you'll find with the schedule board is that you need to know who's here. Somebody's ill, somebody has a sick child, and you need to be able to move that scheduling board. Well, that is the beauty of having these huddles or five-minute meetings in the morning, because you start looking at who's here and how do we get things done. I have found in one of our branches, Albany started early, and then the other three branches, Newport, Lebanon, and Corvallis, started in March.
It seems to me that you mentioned Bend.
At the time that we were meeting with you, I was talking about the Bend branch, and at that point in time, Bend was really far out. Excuse me. Their amount of time to see a client was, they were like 2 or 3 weeks further behind than we were. And at that point in time, we had actually sent one of our workers to spend a week in Bend to help get caught up on some of their ongoing paperwork so that they could see clients faster. We are seeing clients the day they come in.
But Bend is doing better now, right?
Bend is fantastic. They are absolutely. My counterpart from Bend, Ron Parsons, actually mentioned to us a couple of weeks ago how much difference it has made in Bend doing this intake model and then having all the resources that have come to Bend to help get caught up on paperwork. So we've been doing this as a state, supporting each other. There's been a lot of people that our central office has been fantastic about sending resources out to us while we're doing the rollout to help us get caught up, to look at what we're doing, to help however they can. As you can tell, I'm really sold on the process. We are seeing clients. They're happy. I see people walking out the door saying, oh, I'm going to the store. I've got my EBT card. And they just walked in that morning, had never, you know, even been around a SNAP program before. It's going to be hard for me to get that one. But anyway, it is really a positive, effective, efficient way of doing business. It isn't saying that there wasn't any problems, because there is. You know, we are used to doing our work a certain way, and workers now have more structure in, say, they see somebody and they've got 15 minutes before their next appointment. What kind of work can I get done in that 15 minutes? So it's a little different in how they structure their work.
Now, when I was there, and I think it was in November or somewhere in that time frame, Linn County, as I remember, had 11% unemployment at that time,
yes,
which was very high.
Yes.
So, where are you now? Linn County, I think, is higher. I don't know.
I think we're closer to about 14 right at the moment. I haven't checked recently.
Wow.
But I am seeing people that come in our door that we have never worked with. I've been with the agency 22 years and, you know, gone through all the different reorgs and all the different, you know, economic things that we've had. But we're having people that don't even know, as the staff were saying, don't even know what they can buy with an EBT card, or, you know, what stores they can go to, or any of those kinds of things. And so we're really dealing with a different set of our population that don't know anything about us. And to have that group be able to say, do the customer surveys and say that they're getting good customer service, that means a lot. Even, I think we recently got one that it was a sort of a negative customer service thing, but the only thing was negative was he wasn't eligible. Everything else on the form was that he you know, got timely service, his person was knowledgeable, all of those things. It just was that he wasn't eligible.
Questions? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Debbie. John?
Senator Morissette, committee members, I'm John Radich. I'm the District 5 manager for Lane County for DHS CAF. And my role in this is a little bit different. Springfield is one of the pilots for the RPI and one of the early implementers along with Albany. But my role last few months is actually being the sponsor of the statewide rollout. So it's kind of, you know, challenged me to kind of work with all branches and districts throughout the state. And, you know, the points I want to make about this rollout and the model is that I think the key point parts of the model is really standardization of how we're doing intakes, how clients come in and they can get an appointment 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and so they're not waiting longer than 30 minutes is our goal. And then measuring what we're doing, it's really a, obviously, lean transformation. This is really a process measurement, and so you try to get as, you know, decrease your inefficiencies in your system so that you can be more efficient with the staff that you have and get better services to our clients. And another part is really the empowerment of staff so that as they have their huddles and have input at their meetings into how they structure their office, it's important to hear from staff so they have ideas and concepts they want to, you know, to enhance that model and get better services. And I think the other part of this model when we were rolling out was, as Debbie kind of alluded to, is kind of the prioritization of work. Kind of in the past, we had somewhat of a structured system where workers had certain time periods they did intake, certain time periods they did their ongoing work, and they used to call it their paperwork days for their ongoing work. And this model kind of really makes us kind of do the intakes as our first priority so that clients who are not receiving, either they're going to know what they're going to receive or know, even if they're denied, they can at least know that so that their families can make the best decisions for their family to move forward. And then really it's prioritizing that ongoing work kind of in a, you know, in between those intakes and on days when they don't have as many intakes, when they're at the lower part of the schedule, so they have more time to process their ongoing work. And that's kind of a part of that cultural shift too for staff, because we used to be fairly structured, so that's a change to be kind of prioritizing their work in a somewhat structured environment. And I think another fairly significant cultural shift is that standardization, is we wanted consistency throughout the state so that if you have a client that comes from any part of the state and goes into any office, they can expect the same type of service and system. And that's a fairly major change, because for years, I've done this work close to 30 years, and for years, offices have been allowed to design their own intake systems. So some may do intakes in the morning, some would do them in the afternoon, some would do them morning and afternoon. And this is a fairly significant, because we ask them to do it in the morning and afternoon. And I think the standardization part is a key element of lean, laws of metrics and empowerment. But it challenges managers to define the parameters of the what you're trying to achieve in lean, so that workers don't feel disempowered. Because I think in what we learned in rolling out is some staff thought that, you know, they could design their own system, and we're trying to explain to them, no, here's the parameters. Mm-hmm. Our goal is really to have a standardized process throughout the state that, you know, will help clients and communities in order to get benefits.
Now, I'm sure that Treasure Valley, Joseph, Halfway,
right,
all of those places, if they can get the same day service, they have to travel to Ontario or Burns or Baker City or somewhere. Could you talk about some of the rural?
Yeah, the rural areas, there's a number of offices that they're really not even officially offices. They're kind of like a worker goes out from a main office one or two days per week. And those clients, we usually try to give them options, whether they, if they travel to, you know, like Ontario or Baker City, or if they want to wait while the worker goes out to Joseph or Enterprise in some of the rural areas, or Christmas Valley is another example where they go, you know, they go out periodically, you know, during the week. So the clients are given their choice as to what they would like. And so even if in those one-person offices around the state, you know, we still ask the worker to track the metrics and, you know, to see those clients on those days that they're there. And if they're only there once a week, normally they'll be probably more scheduled. They might have like three or four people who called them, said, I want to come in and apply for benefits. And they'll provide that service in those small branches. And we're working on it statewide is actually, you know, trying to move more forward towards a kind of electronic application that people actually could submit. And then we could do the phone interview by phone to expedite their eligibility.
So what are other states doing?
Senator Morissette, what I hear, you know, around is, you know, I think there's a couple states that have tried this, but I know that Food and Nutrition is kind of interested in seeing how we have implemented this and what the results will be, because I think they normally take best practices from various states and, you know, try to get people to enact. I do know there's a couple other states that did have something that was very similar, and, you know, But I haven't done a lot of study as to those other states, but I do know, you know, Food and Nutrition has asked to kind of come out and take a look at our process.
So we have probably one of the better systems in place as a state.
Of course.
You know, this is, you know, I think if you heard from the staff and other presenters, you know, in the staff survey that we're still collecting after, you know, about 3 to 4 weeks of implementation, there's a number of staff, you know, reading their comments, basically said some of them said they worked in, you know, done the work for 20 years, and this is the most significant change that they've experienced as a positive for clients and for staff. So to me, that's very rewarding.
Online and go to NCSL, National Association of State Legislators, and ask about this program, what's going on around the country, Oregon would pop up. Have you checked NCSL?
I have not.
Okay. Who do you hear from outside of the state?
Yeah, it's mostly our central office people. Earlier you had Belit Stockbluth here, and she usually gets calls from others and, you know, interacts, you know, mm-hmm. with other states more than I do with my level.
Yeah. Well, it's very timely that you're doing this changeover because of the, you know, increased number of people. If you had the old system, it would be very time-consuming and chaotic and more staff people probably and so on. Have you had reductions or increases in staff and caseloads? What's the ratio?
Senator Morissette, if you remember, the legislature approved, gave us 60 positions a couple months ago, and we've, you know, have filled those positions, or in the process of filling those. So that's been a big help. We appreciate that. The caseload statewide has, you know, has kind of gone up to 25%, and each month it's been like, you know, about 3%. Since last fall through last month, and so we don't have the data yet for April, but it's fairly significant. I have not seen in my career such a continuous increase each month. It's a lot different than other recessions as far as people coming in. So it is going to be a challenge, and I think one of the challenges of this model is that, you know, as I said, we prioritize those that do not have benefits first, and then the second priority is those ongoing clients. We want to make sure that we're so busy doing the intakes, we keep up their ongoing paperwork so they don't have any disruption of benefits. And that's the part that we're watching closely.
And the economic sustainability of the program.
Well, for food stamps, obviously it's an entitlement program.
Yeah.
So that's, and then there are, you know, we also provide services for medical. People are applying for, you know, Title 19 mm-hmm. Medicaid, and also what so far for the employment-related daycare. But as you know, some of those things are in discussions, you know, for the next biennium as to what level of service.
Okay. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Others wishing to...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I just comment on page 9? I know we've been working on the SNAP card issues, but I would like to just point out the Oregon State Hospital. It stated that it took them 80 days to recruit a qualified nurse, and now that's down to 7 days. And I forget what they told me are... openings are really down, but I can't remember. They used to have a lot of openings because no one wanted to work there. But they've implemented a treatment model, and I think that is what is so exciting, because they now are able to have their psychologists, physicians, and nurses, all positions are being filled at a much greater rate, and it has to do with the transformation that's going on over there too. So I just need to put that in, that it isn't just in the SNAP card. I think it's SNAP card. I like that. Okay.
Well, the testimony that I remember from the Oregon State Hospital last session was that they paid enough overtime to hire practically all the people that they needed if they could find them.
Yeah, now they're finding them.
They're finding them, and so it's not additional funding that they're using, it's existing.
Oh, they're going to need additional funding. yeah, for the new hospital.
Well, I'm not
sure.
But
we don't
I mean,
want another Wapato.
If you have, if you're paying a lot of overtime and you're able to hire more people and you cut down the
yeah,
overtime pays for a number of staff people, but how about psychiatric nurses? Are they able to find them?
Yes, they say that they're able to find those also. I mean, there's still a need, but according to some, you said that, I think, you were the one who told me that they were filling all positions.
Well, it helps to have a hospital administrator running the new state hospital, right? Yeah, because hospital administrators know how to do that. And we have an excellent hospital administrator from Springfield, from McKinsey Willamette Hospital, running that new state hospital. And when he told me he was looking at that job, I said, why don't you apply for the job at Oregon State for basketball? That was before they hired a coach. That would be easier. Easier. But I'm very happy that things are going well with that, with the hospital. But we're not quite where we need to be yet. Okay. The other, John, would you come up, please? One of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about is the WIC program, but that's a different thing, and I don't know if there's anybody here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen here today as co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon. And Mr. Chair, you asked if anybody else would like to have a word to say this morning. I have a couple of brief comments to make. The presentations today have been very good, and there's been very good questions and dialogue going on back and forth. A couple of things that I would say that I want to put into context is that opportunities to streamline and change programs over the years have not always been very well received from the department, but transformation has really changed that. I really think that the work that has been talked about today, there really has been a change in DHS that has been really substantial, and basically with the effort to be client-focused and getting systems streamlined so that people can be seen and benefits can be gotten to people. The things that I would want to just also draw your attention to today are really longer term kinds of things that will be coming to the longer term. By longer term, I mean by the end of the session, is that there are a number of things that are being contemplated about cuts in the Department of Human Services and further falling behind in terms of workload. So the fact that you started off today with talking about workload and ending with transformation is really kind of interesting, because all of the innovation that staff can come up with, which has been substantial, will not measure up to the need for staffing over a period of time, particularly as the caseload goes up. And one final comment I want to leave you with for some consideration is that there are really two models of healthcare expansion reform, which are down in Ways and Means. And by the two different models that I would just mention, is that House Bill 2009 has a more immediate creation of the Oregon Health Authority, and Senate Bill 856 takes a little bit more time to get there. For those of us who have been around for a number of years and we've gone through a number of different changes in DHS, some of which have been successful, like transformation, others have been not quite as successful from an advocacy point of view, I would just point out, for what it's worth, that there are many things to think about decoupling programs in DHS and how they're going to work. And transformation is certainly one of them. But other issues like rebalancing and what will happen with the Medicaid authority going to the authority itself and what happens with the programs that are left within DHS. So I would just submit that there's been a lot of very good news and discussion this morning, but we are facing unprecedented times in the biennium to come, and I think that what we'll want to be able to do is have stakeholders and others, and with your oversight, making sure that whatever changes that we make that will come out of this session will continue to emphasize helping people to get the benefits that they need, helping to streamline where possible, and if we break DHS up, to make sure that we're collaborating, coordinating in the best manner to make sure that people get services that they need.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any comments to that?
No, I agree.
2009 would be that's where the decoupling would take place?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's in both of the major bills, but 2009 happens more immediately than 856.
Well, 856, I think, would keep things in DHS for the...
2 years.
2 years.
For 2 years.
Which would be essential, I think.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just know that it's going to be a big undertaking to make that kind of a change. If you think about it, DHS would essentially have CAF, Children, Adults, and Families, and Seniors and People with Disabilities, and then the rest of DHS would move into the authority. So it's a big change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much. Questions, comments? Okay. Thanks, John. Okay. Others wishing to testify? Okay, seeing none, we will close the information public hearing, and we are adjourned. Thank you.